Welcome to the Pathfinder Podcast, brought to you by Shillington, where we talk to creators about how they navigated their design careers from the early beginnings up until now, and the twists and turns along the way. I'm Jimmy Muldoon, designer and teacher at Shillington's New York campus. Glad you could join us. So today we have Joseph Hahn, who is a design director based in New York. He's produced work for companies such as the New York Times, Van Nuyen, Apple, and Google. Thank you so much for your time today, Joseph. It's great to sit down with you on Zoom and have a chat with you.
Thanks, Jimmy. I'm super excited to be part of your podcast.
Yeah. How's your day going so far? I know that you're based in New York, and so am I. And the glimpses of like warmer weather upon us. It must be nice finally.
Yeah, it's really great. I mean, allergies are also back in season, so I'm sort of happy that I'm inside more than outside. But you know, it's nice to have longer days and have a light out later in the night.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I'm kind of stocking up on allergy tablets a lot more than I normally would. I've got them kind of sitting on my desk just in case. But yeah, it is getting into that allergy season. But you know, it's great for New York, you know, and for everyone, you know, that's listening on this side of the world. We're finally, summer's on our doorstep, which is great.
Yeah, I'm super excited to start going out with everyone getting vaccinated and back to more things in New York.
Yeah. Rooftop bars, you know, exactly. Sunday sessions for sure. I kind of wanted to start around asking you about, you know, your first kind of introduction to design and when that kind of was for you.
Yeah, I sort of get this question a lot. I think it's not easy for me to remember exactly when, but I do remember this specific moment that I was sort of like, it sort of blew my mind. Was I looked at a lot of sort of skateboard and punk music related magazines in high school, as most, you know, dudes do. And you know, in that magazine, I remember like opening the spread and it had this like iconic big silhouette of a vodka bottle, and it said absolute perfection. And it was just this ad that had Futura Black Condensed, and I know the font name now, I didn't know back then, but it was just an ad that showed the vodka bottle with the halo around it and said absolute perfection. And like in the other magazine I opened, it would say like absolute Warhol, and the bottle will be in sort of Andy Warhol's painting style. And then there was another one that said absolute Manhattan, and it would be like an aerial view of Manhattan with sort of the Grand Central Park in the silhouette of the bottle. And that like really sort of blew me away. And it was just like, you know, the repetition of this iconic sort of shape, but sort of changing according to what followed the word absolute. And to me, I think that's when I sort of thought, oh, this is sort of graphic design, or this is a form of graphic design. And I think that was my first introduction to design. In the world.
Yeah. It's a really interesting thing that out of everything you saw in that those skate magazines, like that was what you were drawn to. Like, because obviously magazines back then, you know, had a very strong aesthetic. And that obviously, the absolute vodka really would have, you know, stood out from everything else that was in that magazine. Do you feel that in reflection, that's the kind of work that you are still drawn to, or that you still produce yourself as a designer?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I was drawn to it because I think as a high school kid, you're always trying to find ways to get access to alcohol. But I think, yeah, there's definitely like the aesthetic and sort of this graphic quality that I really love. I think even, you know, what I do every day, I think it's trying to find the balance between sort of the constant and the variable. And even a lot of the branding work too, you know, what is that consistent element versus what changes? And I think I was really drawn to that in the absolute campaign, the ad campaign that's super timeless and iconic. Is that sort of that visual oomph and sort of the iconicity behind it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing for brands these days to have that constant but variable element. And obviously for a brand like Absolute, they've got brand recognition for years where they're able to kind of do that. Like, is that something that you are thinking about maybe, you know, building out an earlier brand options of variables for that brand? Is that something that kind of is in the back of your mind as you're creating it?
Yeah, I definitely think a lot about how to make something that's very recognizable and differentiated. And I think that's sort of like the basic approach to branding. But, you know, the component that I'm really drawn to is making something that's iconic and different through that iconicity. So in that sense, I think, you know, they did a really great job of owning that visual language. And it's so simple and effortless. And it's, you know, it's always evolving without losing the core language of it.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I think if you open up a magazine or you see a billboard or you see a post on Instagram, like, it's still got that core visual there. It probably looks very different to the ones that you saw in the magazine and the evolution of the brand, but you still see it at the, like, just that first glimpse, you know what it is. Like, the product, dead center, you know, and the variables around it. It's a very, very, like, clever kind of brand campaign that, you know, we're still talking about now since, you know, you left high school.
Yeah, definitely.
I would like to kind of get your take on your kind of childhood and maybe even like maybe the earliest memories of maybe the creativity. What was it, a creative household that you grew up in? Or were you always kind of like curious of design?
Yeah. So I have an identical twin brother. His name is John. So having a twin brother, you know, it really changes your childhood. And I think most twins would agree. And I remember, like, my parents would tell us that, you know, before we even knew how to speak our first language, we would like shout out like gibberish at each other and like while we're drawing things on paper. And I think like we were constantly trying to communicate things visually and like with our body language and just like with words. And I think that sort of really made sort of setting for me when I was growing up to be always drawing things and making things and showing things to each other and my brother and myself. And that sort of like made it super sort of natural to that practice of art and drawing and painting in the house that I grew up in. And it's really hard for me to like remember like at one point that made me sort of become interested in design or arts, because I feel like I've never like not wanted to be an artist or designer. Like, it was always something that I wanted to do, whether it was like in the beginning it was like comic book artists, and then like I was like exposed to a lot of Disney movies that my mom would bring home, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna work at Disney and like draw these characters, and it's just kept evolving to you know become like a product designer, to now like towards the end I was like really drawn to graphic design. So I think that sort of upbringing sort of kept me focused in the creative industry, interested in that industry.
That's really interesting. Do you still have a close relationship with your brother where you understand each other by just like body language or like looks or something? Because obviously you're very close from such, you know, with trying to communicate to each other. Is that something that is still there between you two?
Yeah, definitely. I think like we always joke around that, like, you know, being a twin, we became super like aware, alert about other people's body language, and like we are really quick to read other people's like moods or like their sort of what they're feeling. And maybe everyone thinks that they're good at like they are reading other people, but like we definitely like look at each other and we can tell like what the air is like in the room, and like what if we're like upset or if we're like happy and excited with something, like we know oftentimes by just like looking at each other and other people. And yeah, we're so close. I think he's sort of we're living so far away now, but we keep in touch, and he works in more of the entertainment and industry, and I work in design industry. But you know, we definitely have overlaps in our interests.
Mm. it's really interesting how you talk about at such a young age, picking up on environment, picking up on people's body language, if they're happy, if they're sad, if they approve or disapprove. Is that something that obviously as a designer and you're pitching work and all those things, do you find that you read a situation or a pitch or a presentation and see kind of what's happening or pick up on something and shift gears or shift something?
Yeah, I mean, I've had, you know, I've worked with some previous few creative directors, and often they tell me that I'm very quick on my feet, and like I react very quickly, whether it's like a joke or like a sort of change in sort of the vibe in the room, and I would sort of be able to answer things quicker than like that they expected. And I think that sort of is really from, you know, being in that environment, even as you know, as a young kid, that you're always like talking to someone who's just like you, and we're like always arguing and competing and also like laughing and all of that. So I think it sort of did kind of help me a lot in the industry, but also just in terms of, you know, human relationships. I think it sort of helped me a lot.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. So you're born in South Korea, then you're raised in Vancouver. You know, how do you think your upbringing and the different cultures that you have experienced throughout your life have influenced your design approach and style, and even now being in New York?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think like to give a little bit of like brief history of Korea, like just fast forward to like 1910 and Japan sort of took over the country, and it was ruled by Japan. And after 35 years, Korea became independent. And like in 5 years, there was a Korean War between North and the South. So like by 1960s, like the country was like one of the poorest country on the planet. But like in just 50 years, fast forward to today, they're one of the world's most sort of digitally connected world countries in the world. And the most, you know, highest internet speed and everything. And that sort of like is a proof of like resilience in culture and the people. Mm. And there's just like, but there's on the flip side of the coin, like people are hyper competitive. So, and always comparing each to each other. And I think I left Korea when I was 13 because I lived in one of the most competitive neighborhoods in Korea called Gangnam. I don't know if you know Psy's Gangnam Style.
No. Oh,
so there's sort of this like the famous sort of dance, you know, the horse dance.
Yeah.
So that song is called Gangnam Style. It's based on that city name. So that city is like one of the most competitive cities. And I think as a 13-year-old, I felt super unhappy because, like, you know, the education system was quite conforming, and there was this sort of notion of success in life being like very, it was like, you know, you have to be a doctor, you have to be a lawyer, like it's sort of this like it's like almost like a prototype of success. So I think my mom saw me and my brother sort of being quite sort of unhappy in our childhood and when we were in sixth grade. So she one day just decided to move to Canada. She said, hey, we're going to move. And it was like that erupt. And Canada is, I think, like 9,000 times bigger than Korea, but it has 15 million less people. So that's like a crazy thing to even like picture, right? It's like 9,000 times bigger, but 15 million less people. And one of the most difficult thing when we moved there was like, obviously, that we couldn't speak English.
Mm.
So it's funny because it was almost like a repetition of what happened between me and my brother when we were like infants. Like we were trying to communicate with people like visually. And I remember still like being in a class filled with Canadians, like I was like the only Korean Asian. And I was trying to like draw things I was drawing people's names on their arms and doing like graffiti or like drawing like Mickey Mouse and like trying to make friends from drawing and being like the artist in the room. And yeah, and that sort of led me to become like that student in class that everyone wants to be in the team of when there was like an art assignment or like a creative assignment. And that sort of like kept me going in terms of being interested in design. And I think the, like I told you earlier, with like the magazines and like the skateboards and music album artwork, like I was sort of always interested in and the graphic qualities of those things. And it sort of led me to where I am today. So like the culture, it's more than just the culture. It was more like sort of the feeling of being restricted from communicating that sort of kept me wanting to, you know, communicate visually and create things that are like artistic.
Mm. That's really incredible to see kind of the things that you've walked away from, you know, from South Korea to then, you know, to Canada, like not knowing English and having to a completely different culture as well. Mm-hmm. But still kind of being tied to that communication and then learning how to communicate, I think is a really interesting thing that obviously you've learned a lot about communication, you know, visually, but even like just, you know, you were talking about before, you know, body language and reading a room, like you've been exposed to communication at such a young age in so many different forms. And I'm sure that has really kind of allowed you to think about projects or communicate a concept or a visual identity or a tone of voice, mm-hmm. in or even just color and illustration in such a different way because of the environments that you were placed in at such informative years, you know, in countries.
For sure. Yeah, I think even when I design, I think a lot about trying to sort of articulate a narrative to someone who's not, you know, from the design industry. And I think at BASE, where I am currently working at, there's a manifesto that says, you know, we design for people, not designers. And I think that sort of goes to that notion of, you know, how do we talk about design that makes sense to, you know, my dad or like a guy walking down the street who has no idea what sort of Helvetica is, you know, how do you talk about logo and sort of typefaces to someone who has no idea what they are. And I think it's in that sort of visual communication or building the narrative in the presentation that I sort of enjoy as much as designing the things themselves.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting that the manifesto of BASE, it's so easy as creatives to design something pretty for our portfolio or for Behance or for Instagram or whatever. The only people that are going to be seeing it are other creatives, because creatives follow creatives. But you're talking about, you know, the person on the corner of the street, or, you know, the parents or the grandparents or the person who's just new to the country. How do you visually communicate to them that that's the goal right there, instead of how many likes it gets or if it wins an award or whatever. Like, essentially, that should be irrelevant. It should just be about communication, getting that message across.
Yeah, and I don't want to like sort of undermine like people who create design for artists or working in the industry that is filled with other types of creatives. But like, I think it's a lot more challenging to design like a toothpaste packaging versus designing like a museum brochure or museum identity, because I mean, both are equally valuable, but I think it's harder to make something that is not only like visually formally attractive to people who speak the same vernacular versus like creating something that, you know, differentiates, stands out while still doing its most important thing, which is sort of communicating what it is and still like being attractive to people who might be interested in those objects. So for me, it's like a very different challenge, and I think one is definitely much harder to achieve.
Yeah, definitely. So I kind of want to talk about a little bit more about your career. Can you tell us a little bit about your career and how that has led you to be working at BASE in New York?
Sure. So I studied graphic design at RISD, Rhode Island School of Design. I went from Vancouver, flew all the way to East Coast in America, and I studied graphic design for 4 years. And in my last year, I took this course called Brand Identity Design, and I sort of gravitated towards it very quickly. And what I loved about it was like this relationship between, similar to the absolute vodka example, which is like between the constant and the variable. And it wasn't exactly the logo making that I loved. It was like thinking about how that identity becomes and behaves differently for different applications and different moments of the journey of that specific brand. And that got me super excited. So as I was graduating, I looked into a lot of places that seemed to be doing similar type of work. So my first job was at this kind of a big agency called Interbrand. It's a sort of a global brand consultancy. And I spent about 3 years there, and I met tons of smart people. There was like three different teams: strategy, verbal identity, and brand, the design team. And like, you know, the great thing about working with people who's outside of your sort of expertise is that you're always soaking so much from them and learning how they think. And sort of that also sort of made me a designer who not only thinks about form and aesthetics, but also strategy and how you can tell that story. But what I was missing a little bit from that place was that a lot of design that I was creating was ended up in like presentation decks and not in the real world. And I sort of never knew if I was going to see it in light or not. So I think I sort of looked into places that are a little smaller. And I reached out to Natasha Jen at Pentagram and spent 4 years there. And what I realized in that 4 years of experience was that I was really excited to see what I designed in real life. Mm. And I worked on things from like ice cream packaging to, you know, fashion label branding to publication design to sort of environmental things. And I love sort of that experience of walking down the street and seeing something that I sort of designed as a physical object. And sort of that led me to look at places that are a little smaller. And it was after 4 years, I started looking at other studios out there. And I remember talking to Min at Base for a long time. And we started talking, and there was a great opportunity there. So I joined the studio, and I've been working there for 2 years and a half, 4 months now. And yeah, it's been a great experience.
Mm. It's really interesting that, exposure to, especially when you move to Pentagram, I think it seems like that was a kind of a really pivotal moment of actually touching different kind of products, you know, from packaging to identities to, you know, museum. What out of those things do you feel like you enjoy the most? Like if you had to choose one, what do you think you would kind of be gravitating towards at the moment?
I think like the best part about being a graphic designer in this industry is that like you can really dive into many different sectors and industries. And I think many graphic designers would agree that that's what excites them a lot about being on the agency side or the studio side. And I really love that, you know, one day you're talking to people who study fashion, but on the other days you're talking to someone from big tech companies and on blockchain sometimes, and sometimes like fashion designers. And that sort of is a roller coaster of like learning new things and engaging into things that you never would if you never met those clients. So yeah. I think, you know, it really keeps me curious and excited about the profession.
Yeah, definitely. What was it like when you saw your first, you know, piece of work or something that you worked on out in the wild? Do you still remember what it was?
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple, but I think one project that I am most proud of, one of them is the Van Leeuwen ice cream project, because like you said, I think it was such a surreal experience to walk into a store or a mall and look, seeing like the ice cream pint that you designed in the fridge. As you're like walking down the aisle, like any customer or consumer, it's such a surreal experience. It was for me. And that's when I kind of realized like, oh, I need to be keep making things like this and making real things that I can touch, because that's when I feel the most excited about my job.
Yeah, and it makes people happy. It's ice cream. Like, who's not happy?
Exactly.
Ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're at base. What skills would you say are essential to your job as a design director at base?
I think that's a great question. I think all the design directors are probably wondering exactly what their job is or the role is, because I think it's a really tricky, I think it's a pivotal sort of role in sort of a traditional design career trajectory, because you're sort of going from a designer and a senior designer to a design director level, and then you become like a creative director, and sort of it's a shift from designing to sort of managing and directing. So you're sort of, as a design director, sitting at that peak of sort of that, the two ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, at least, I think a good design director leads through like bridging the thinking and making. And I think what that means is that you're constantly trying to assess what you're making, if it's connected to the strategy or the idea, while making sure that design is a high quality of craft in it, because you have to sort of show and lead through the craft of design, but also keep the team engaged in a way that they are constantly thinking about the idea, what the idea behind of it is, and the strategy behind it. So you're not just going around in circles of making something that looks pretty or visually interesting, but rather sort of like thinking against an idea of that.
Mm.
I think as a junior designer, well, if we look at the other spectrum or the timeline of, you know, going to school and graduating, you're sort of like leaving as with a very strong point of view about design, or at least like that's the whole point of the final year in school, right? To sort of know what you want to do in your career, kind of, and to sort of pursue a certain design path that you want to pursue. And so when you first join a studio, I think it's a very sort of interesting moment where you feel like you knew what you're doing, but you're thrown into this world where everyone is a lot more experienced and they're sort of telling you what to do. And I think there is always that sort of sort of discomfort there, but I think when we evaluate junior designers, I think we're looking for sort of three things, or thinking in three parts. Like, first is sort of pre-meeting them, right? Which means like you see their portfolio, and what I look for at least is element of surprise and craft. And what that means is like we, you know, as professionals, we always see the type of work that is sort of maybe perhaps limited by the reality or the sort of client's restrictions. So when we see work that is sort of expected, it's not that exciting to mm-hmm. us. But, you know, as a graduating person, like having something surprising or unexpected, I think it's a really important and crucial element to get someone excited. And the craft side of it is just making sure that they have the basic understanding of, you know, typesetting and sort of the rules of graphic design. So we know that this person is able to execute things that are not like the bigger picture idea-based things, but also like micro typography and micro elements that makes design that much more sophisticated. So that's sort of like the pre-meeting part. I think like when you meet them, it means like we probably like the work and we're curious about the person. Mm-hmm. And when they come in, I think what we look for is like this passion and their ability to articulate why they made certain design decisions. And I think that sort of goes to your question, like, do they have to talk strategy? And absolutely not. I don't think we expect young designers to like talk about strategy behind their work. I mean, if they can, that's great. But again, like going back to that term strategy, it can be replaced with ideas. So if they're mm-hmm. able to talk about their project through an idea and why they made those decisions versus explaining what's on the page, you know, like, you know, you don't want to say like, oh, here's the logo or here's like a poster, because then like that's what everyone sees on the page too. It's more about how you talk about why you made certain decisions and why it made sense to you. So that's sort of like in the meeting. And if you get hired as a junior designer or an intern, there's a whole sort of element of hard skill and soft skill, which means, you know, you want to make sure that you are helpful, of course, and that you're super eager and eager to be improving and hardworking, of course, and passionate. So I think it's the combination of these three different phases of meeting them that makes them valuable junior people.
Mm. And it seems like from your experience, you had that, you know, going in as a junior from, you know, into brand, into Pentagram, into base, there was that element of all of those things you were talking about. You had the passion, the drive, and you obviously you had the work and you had the ideas that you're able to communicate and so forth, to then kind of be kind of like helped. And maybe, you know, I don't know if maybe nurture is the right word, but like kind of led into like how it works, because I'm sure from Interband to Pentagram to base, it's all run very differently, maybe internally. So to kind of be shown the ropes, everyone starts there. And I'm sure that was nerve-wracking for you somewhat going in as a junior.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, I'm saying these things because, like, I'm sort of looking at the past now, but I don't think I was all of these things. Like, as a junior, I used to think I was, like, really good, but I think back and I'm like, oh, shit, you know? Like, you know, that's what I mean. Like, you come out of school thinking you're, like, an awesome designer, and people are, but you also need to be humble and you have to sort of assume that people know better than you, or like, at least try to find best elements and people that you can learn from. And so as a junior designer, I thought, you know, I was really good, but then I also met people who were sort of direct and told me like, oh, your type is horrible. And I was just like shocked and upset. But I guess one thing I am happy about was that I didn't just like get upset and sort of walked away. I was curious. I was like, well, how can I be better? Like, what do you mean by like those things? And then I would see how they teach me about what they meant. And I think through that experience and the repetition of constantly trying to learn from other people, I was able to sort of become better than who I am like yesterday. So
yeah,
in that sense, I think, that sort of led me to where I am now.
Mm. It can be a bit shocking or jarring hearing something like that from someone that, you know, you respect or and so forth. And it's not always easy to kind of swallow that pill.
Yeah.
And then to go back and go, but why? Or can you show me how to get better at something? I think that's obviously a great thing to kind of have that drive to want to get better. Can you tell us briefly about your design process and what that kind of looks like, you know, at base or for yourself?
Mm-hmm. I think like at base, so Min, our creative director in New York, says this often in our process, which is creatively strategic and strategically creative. And I think that sort of, you know, goes into how we sort of work on strategy before we get into design phase. And in a way, we're thinking about those two things as sort of imperial, like together to think in as a group. So like, even when we think in strategy, we're not just thinking in sort of cold sort of hearted way, we're thinking in a creative way to tell that strategic narrative. But when we work on design, we're not just thinking in forms and aesthetics, we're thinking against strategy. So what that means in our design process is that we're constantly trying to sort of push and pull between those two worlds, which is, you know, not as simple as it sounds, because we're, you know, looking at what we're making and we're like being hypercritical about the formal decisions and the craft of it all, but at the same time sort of zooming back and asking like, is this really tied to our strategy work and our idea that we're trying to communicate? And because of that sort of really intense process, we often present one design direction.
Mm-hmm.
And often, you know, at Pentagram or like other studios, like they do present multiple design options or directions. And, you know, when I first heard that approach of designing one direction, I actually thought it's like less work, but it's actually not the case, because, you know, in order to get to that one direction, you know, we've probably done like 9, 10, you know, 11 design directions to get to that point. And because it's one direction when we present, it's just that much, it has to be that much more in depth and thought through to convince and persuade that our client that, you know, it is the right choice. So it's like a higher mountain to climb, but once you get to the top, it's just like that much more better air. So that's sort of like our common design process.
It, like, obviously that one direction is, there's a lot, you know, it feels like a lot of pressure, especially when you, as a grad, you know, you may be presenting in school two or three ideas, and then to go to one is like, there's a lot kind of resting on that. And obviously that is something that happens, you know, in different, you know, agencies and studios. As a junior, do you still think that it's something that, do you think the three concept or the two ideas is that nice kind of approach to take when doing projects?
Yeah, definitely. I think that one direction is more for what we show the client. I don't think that means, like, as a junior, like, you should do one direction, because that's a little arrogant as a junior person to say, like, this is the direction. I mean, you can, you know, obviously you're not going to show like 10 directions, but I think it's really important to be able to express ideas in many different ways. I think that's one of the actually key characteristics of a strong designer, is that they're able to articulate and express certain idea in many different ways. So I think it's actually good to be able to do that. But it's also an important skill set to edit and understand, like, what the strongest option would be. I think that comes through a lot of practice and understanding and self-evaluating. So I think you need to have both qualities of going wide and being able to focus.
Yeah, really good. When you worked on Banyun's brand identity when you were at Pentagram, how long did that take for that one project?
So I think that probably took about like 6 to 8 months, and I think it had different phases. So that project didn't have like a strategy phase. It was actually a very low budget project. It was very casual. The three founders came to Natasha at Pentagram, and they had like two goals in their mind. One was to unify their vegan flavor packaging with their classic flavor packaging. And those two looked like almost like they're coming from two different brands. So that was their one goal. The second goal was to really reflect their sort of homespun, sort of Brooklyn based, like from the truck vibe into their graphic design of the packaging. So we went like directly into design phase without going into strategy, because they already knew exactly what, you know, we had to do. And we sort of visited the grocery store or Whole Foods, and we saw a whole bunch of ice cream pines, and we tried to analyze like what was going on in the industry. And like every ice cream brand was sort of shouting like, oh, this is me. Like, I want to stand out. And the other one next to it was trying to say the same thing. So everyone was screaming, and we thought like, well, how do you stand out from a crowd that's screaming? Well, you just basically have to be quiet, and then you stand out. So our design solution to that was just very simple, but hyper effective, which was, you know, the classic flavors are solid colors, and the vegan flavors are white pines with colored rims. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we approached it actually very sort of strategically, you know, but then it became like extremely Instagrammable, you know, to use like the trendy word. And then and they raised sales by 50%. Wow. And that was sort of like a very exciting moment for me and the team, because, you know, yeah, I can't really say probably like design can change the world or design can change some things, but when it does to this extent, it's like, yeah, it's really refreshing and rewarding to hear that. So working with them was like a super fun experience. And so the design of the packaging took about 6 months, and then we sort of began to, you know, create things for their in-store applications, like the signs and the menus and the printouts. And then we went to their truck wraps. And so it was like a really fun experience of, you know, extending the packaging to other brand applications.
Mm. So even like kind of, you spoke about it before, the constant and the variable. How does that play out within this brand identity?
Oh, wow. I think that's really interesting that you asked that, because like, I don't think like I measure design that way when I'm doing it, but like after the process, I think it is sort of within that spectrum. I think like you could say the constant is the sort of simplicity of the brand, which is like a solid color, or the use of circles, which we sort of introduced to their original language. And the variable is basically between the classic flavors and vegan flavors, but also like in the way we use this circular motif. Sometimes it's just singular, but it becomes like a pattern on the store signs, and sometimes it becomes a wall, and sometimes on the screens of the menu boards, like it becomes an animation that goes from dots to sort of bubbles to like a bigger ice cream shapes, and sort of like you, I think that's sort of the play between the constant and the variable for the brand.
It's great to kind of hear that from like your perspective of like where those variables and constants are, because it could be, you know, something different for some people, but that's really interesting to hear, you know, from someone who worked on it, that kind of insight. And again, you've worked on lots of different mediums, you know, from fashion brands, editorial, environmental, packaging. Maybe what is one of the biggest lessons you've learned from maybe one of those projects or one of those mediums?
It's hard. I think like the biggest lesson is that, I think maybe this is like a bit too general, but I think like you learn like the most by just simply like listening to people who are in different industries and sectors. And I think I've never really approached these different types of projects differently. Like it was actually quite, I guess, singular, simple in a sense. Like I just try to listen to them and see what would help them, and then try to approach it in similar ways that I approach any project, is to like, well, what's the idea that we're trying to sort of create, and how are we going to tell this story through design as clearly as possible to consumers or people who are interfacing with the brands? So I don't know if that's like one thing I learned.
I know that you've done some stuff for the New York Botanical Gardens, is that right?
Yeah.
You know, like you're working big scale there versus an ice cream tub.
Yeah. I mean, for New York Botanical Garden, it was like the main goal was to create a hyper strict system, because, you know, with a big institution like that, like they have to be able to produce things very quickly and in many different sort of, they also have very many sub identities within the brand. So our focus was just to create something that's very pure, just like the nature and sort of the environment itself, and sort of allow the imagery or the beauty of the botanics just be celebrated as much as they can be. So the system, it was actually very straightforward. It was, we would always have like white air on top, white space, and then the image will get half the space of the surfaces. And that became a very strong system for them to use throughout the years. And I think, you know, knowing that they have to exist in many different sort of platforms and situations, I think that sort of system was actually very useful for them, because, you know, it was just almost like a mathematical system to sort of divide the canvas in half and plug in the beautiful imagery of the flowers and plants. And then you just set the name simply NYBG, and it just sort of spoke that language. So yeah, that's sort of how like we approached that project. But also, like, you know, we would approach projects like Ben Lewin very similarly, in the sense that like it is also hyper systematic, in the sense that as they add more flavors, the pines or the packaging is also able to sort of produce itself into its own unique form while being systematic to the rest of it.
Mm. Well, going back to the botanical, you spoke about the system that you built for that and then handing it over. Did they have an in-house team that then kind of continued to roll it out?
Yeah, they did. They have the in-house design team, and I think that's like an interesting sort of friction nowadays. I think like a lot of the in-house institutions or companies now have a design team, and I think it's important to give them design system that is, you know, flexible enough for them to also play with it and push it, so it's not overly limiting. I think, you know, 30, 40 years ago, when there was lack of design in-house design team, like the guidelines or the system had to be almost overly systematic and restrictive, so it doesn't sort of give birth to like crazy different babies and everywhere around the world, right? It's all had to look like siblings or become part of family. So I think, but now, because we live in an age where, you know, everything's hyper-connected, then you can share files and you can like work on similar platforms, and it's sort of, we need to think about design systems or guidelines, what we call, to feel less like a rule book, but more as like giving ingredients and tools for the designers internally to evolve from. And I think in that sense, like, I think your Botanical Garden is successful in a way that is really systematic. But in hindsight, I also wonder if the system could have been a little bit more open and flexible so they can sort of evolve. So there's always sort of that, I think, friction between the two.
Mm. At Shillington, you know, and there's other design schools out there that are going to have these grads entering the design community. How can they kind of stand out from the crowd?
I think the most important thing is having great work, obviously. I think it's sort of a blessing for us to be able to get a job interview or even get a full job offer from purely sending example of work. Not a lot of professions can do that. Like if you're a strategist, for example, like you can't really send work. Example, you have to sort of go and talk about the strategy. Or if you are like if you work in like a music industry, you know you have to sort of go and talk about like the decisions you made and like sort of what the music style and like things you're creating. But like the thing about being a designer is that your work sort of can speak for itself, and so I think it's really important to have good work. And I mentioned earlier, like the sort of balance between surprise and craft. So it sort of proves that you are thinking in bold in different ways, as well as like proving that you have attention to detail. And then I think once you go in, I think, as I mentioned earlier, it's about being able to tell a story and articulate your ideas. So you're not just saying what's on the page.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. In your, you know, from where you stand, how would you define success?
That's a really hard question. Success in terms of like as a designer or success as a person? That's a deep one.
It is a deep one. I don't know. I'm going to let you kind of choose what success looks like, maybe for you as a person.
Yeah. Well, I think if I answer this with perfect confidence, I think I've sort of solved my life if I knew what the success was. But I think like today I like to say, for me, success is when I know that I've done everything I could and I don't have regrets. So like if it's design work, then like if I know that I've sort of pushed and hard enough, and if the solution is something that I can sort of stand by, then I think that's a successful design. And of course there's like the element of know, was it success for the client? What, you know, did it solve its problem? There's definitely elements of that, but I'm including that in the same bucket. But so I think if there's no regrets there, I think it's success for me. And but if there's like a moment where I know I could have done better, or if there's like a, you know, it doesn't even have to be design. If it can be like everyday activity or like human relationships or friendships. And I think when I feel like, you know, I could have done something, but I didn't. And that's why something, you know, wasn't as good as it could be. I think that's sort of an example of failure, I guess, you know, opposite of success. So yeah. I mean, I'm every day I'm still trying to figure out what success means and how, because success essentially means that, you know, happiness or like being happy for me. So I'm figuring that out every day.
Yeah, definitely. What is some of the best career-related advice you've ever received?
Oh, that's really hard too. Oh, all these hard questions. I read this essay. It's not an advice, but I read this essay by Michael Beirut, who's a partner at Pentagram. It's been there for a really long time. Not diving, but swimming. So that was a response to a controversial redesign of, you know, the Metropolitan Museum of Art's logo. So he like wrote this essay called Not Diving, But Swimming. And it sort of goes along the lines of, you know, we live in a moment that rewards snap judgments, you know, from Instagram posts to like Instagram stories that are like 5 seconds long, TikTok to word limits on Twitter. And people look at design and they almost look at it like it's a diving contest, meaning like they look at when the design comes out and how it hits the water, they sort of judge it. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the new logo for the Met as, it's a swimming contest, which means like it's about how long you can keep your, you know, head under the water. And I think, you know, this sort of was sort of a good advice for me, even as an essayist. You know, how I approach, you know, career or design or way of life is like, you know, it's not about impressing someone in the moment of, or it's not about how many likes you get on Instagram. It's, or, you know, how popular you are in the industry. It's more about, you know, keeping at it and keep practicing and believe, like acting on what you believe in and walking the talk. And I think that sort of is a representation of like how I see also sort of success, I guess, going back to the previous question.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I that's a really, really interesting approach and thought pattern behind that. And I'll definitely be looking into that once we finish this call, of like delving into that, because it's so easy when we see these designs splash onto Instagram or a blog. And you know, yes, we've all got our own personal opinions and our first kind of reactions to it and so forth. Like, we're humans. But I think I remember someone saying to me a while ago, is like, but we haven't received, what was the brief? You know, we don't know that, because all we're seeing is a visual on Instagram or wherever, or a blog.
Exactly.
But like, what did the client want? And what was delivered right to them, and has that been met? Yes or no?
Right.
Yes. Cool. That's a success for that person. You may disagree or whatever, but if the client and the designer are like, this is a success, that they're swimming.
Right. You know? Exactly. Yeah. 100%.
It's very easy in this day and age to have that first initial,
I mean, everything has become like a spectator sports, you know, everything is sort of up for grabs and everyone is commenting and everyone has an opinion, which is great. But also like you said, it's, you know, the goal of a design project or a job is to, you know, help the clients, consumers, you know, not just the client, you know, who their consumer is. And I think it's great for people to, you know, sort of talk about what they like and things like that. But, you know, it's also a bigger problem than that. It's not just a superficial, quick assessment that someone can make to determine it's good or bad.
Yeah, definitely. So where can people find your work?
My work, I have a very sort of lo-fi website that has sort of highlights of my project. It's not like a comprehensive case study of each of the projects. I've sort of been not so good at keeping my website updated and things like that, but I like to believe that, you know, good designers are busy working, not busy showing their work. That's my excuse. So you can see some of that there. Or, you know, I have an Instagram account that sometimes I share work in progress and things like that. But yeah, that's where you could potentially see my work.
What's your handle or website so people can kind of jump on and check it out?
Yeah, so my website is my name, josephhan.com, and my email is, not email, my Instagram handle is Joseph, J-Y-H-A-N. Yeah, that's my Instagram handle.
Perfect. There we go. Joseph, thank you so much for your time, your insights, and sharing with us. It's great to finally sit down with you and chat. There's absolute gold in there, and I know this is going to be hugely beneficial for, you know, designers that are listening to this. So, yeah, thank you so much for sharing things that you've learned in your career. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jimmy. It's really exciting to be part of your podcast. Yeah. Best of luck.
Yeah, thanks very much. We'll speak soon.
The Pathfinder podcast has been brought to you by Shillington, the original graphic design bootcamp. To learn more about the podcast and Shillington, click the link in the bio. Show your support by subscribing and rating us on your preferred podcast platform. Original music composed and performed by Menakshi. Thanks for listening.